Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to another episode of But Why, the podcast is all about digging into big questions and tricky topics via honest conversations. This week we're going to be looking at sobriety. Today's guest is the founder of the Sober Girls Society, and she's a journalist. She's written for Elle, Stylist and the Evening Standard, as well as being featured on the BBC. Not only that, she's the author of the Sober Girls Society Handbook. At this point, I always feel the need to pick up the book and show you, but that is not good, given that people, A, you know what the book like, and B, for the listener, they can't see it. But anyway, it's an empowering guide to living hangover-free. So without further ado, let me introduce to you Millie Gooch. Hello, Millie.
Hello. Oh, thank you for that introduction. I always get really embarrassing. People like real things.
It's absolutely excruciating. And actually, to be honest, on the last couple of series, because it's so embarrassing, I ended up doing it not kind of in the podcast session. But then actually, it's quite nice to have that kind of roll into it. So we put it back in. But I always sit here like with my hands in front of my face if someone's doing one of those about me. Which is terrible, isn't it? You need to kind of own your achievements, which are amazing.
Oh, thank you. But it is. It's like, oh my God, I can't hear that about myself.
Awful. Absolutely awful. Yeah. So I'm going to start with three important questions before we get deeply into it. How are you really? And we just had a chat off mic, so I don't know how you're going to answer this.
Yeah. How am I really? I'm okay. Like, I'm okay. I wouldn't say I was fantastic. I've recently gone through a breakup and a big life change. I've just turned 30. So I'm not going to say this is where I thought my life was going to be at 30, suddenly like single and starting again, but I'm okay. I'm here. I'm alive and I'm happy and I'm healthy. So yeah, it's fun.
And actually, we're going to dig into that a bit more in a minute because I think there's some interesting things in relation to sobriety. Also, what star sign are you and what is your favourite biscuit?
I am a Leo.
Oh.
Yeah. I think I'm quite a typical Leo as well, I've been told. My favourite biscuit is, there's like a Fox's chocolate crunch one. I think it's a very popular one, and that is, I can't get them too often because like there's no moderation there. Whatsoever, it's like a packet in one go.
So I'll tell you the truth, I love the ginger cream and the crunch cream. I've never had the chocolate cream, but I can only imagine that I will absolutely
don't start because that'll be the end.
It's the middle bit chocolate, the creamy bit.
Yeah, with it, these are like a chocolate cookie, but they're like crunchy as well. They're soft and they're crunchy. They've just got the whole like repertoire.
It's quite we're recording this podcast at like 11:30. This is actually quite a peak biscuit time. I would say maybe you should have biscuits on the podcast, but then you just have crunching. But that sounds like a great choice. I'm going to look into that. And I'm now going to ask myself throughout the podcast whether you are a typical Leo. How much into astrology are you? Do you know the rest of your chart?
I flit in and out. Sometimes I think, yeah, this is really truthful. And then other times I'm a bit scared. I swing between skepticism and full belief. So I think I'm a, I think I've got another Leo in there somewhere, one of the rising or something. And then I want to say Libra. I think it might be all the L's.
Okay. Okay. So Libra moon, maybe. Does that ring a bell? I'm not sure.
It's one of the two, but I have done my birth chart before, but I've clearly not taken enough notice.
That's fine. I mean, I sit in a place of wanting to think it's a complete rubbish, but I'm actually quite deeply into it. So that is where I'm at.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, this podcast is quite emotional for me because I had Millie as a guest on Honesty podcast, actually in my first series of Honesty in February 2019. And she now knows because I've told her many times, but unbeknownst to her, that conversation, along with a follow-up conversation with Dave, I don't know what his Instagram handle is now, Dave, who was
Sober Dave.
Yeah. My conversation with Millie was the thing that transformed my own kind of perspective on my relationship with booze. And we recorded the podcast in February and I gave up drinking in May because she was the first person I had ever spoken to who spoke about alcohol in the way that I was experiencing it. So to give people some context, talk about how long you've not been drinking for, what led you to give up drinking. Yeah, a little bit of context to where you're at.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, I won't go into the full story because that we could be here all day. But I really started drinking when I went to university, which is actually quite late in British terms. So I wasn't really like a 14-year-old drink at the park. I literally started drinking when I went to university. And I loved drinking. It was so much fun when I first went to uni. And also, I felt like it brought out this like really confident side of me that wasn't necessarily always there. But over the years, I kind of was drinking for fun, and then suddenly I was drinking to cope with emotions and mental health. So I really started struggling with anxiety and depression, and so I drank more to kind of cope with them, and then my drinking just got steadily worse. And it was really hard for me to kind of put it as like problem drinking, because I'd only ever been told that problem drinking was waking up and putting vodka on your cornflakes, or, you know, secretly stashing booze. Whereas I could go a few days, weeks even without drinking, and then it would get to like the weekend and I would have had a hard time, and I would just go out and get absolutely paralytic, blotto drunk, wake up the next day with the most horrendous anxiety, beer fear, what they'd done, what they said. And that kind of permeated my everyday life, because these hangovers and hangover anxiety were just lasting like 3-4 days. And then by the time I felt normal again, someone would go, do you want to go out for drinks? And I'd go, yeah, go on then. So I got myself into like a real binge drinking spiral, and also kind of a bit of a shame cycle, because I was feeling awful about the things I was doing that didn't really align with who I thought I was. I was feeling bad about the things I was doing, and just didn't really feel like me. But the only thing that kind of made me feel more like me was drinking, because when I felt insecure and low, I thought, well, if I have a drink, I can plaster on that smile and, you know, be the funny person and the center of attention, and no one will know that actually inside I'm hurting quite a bit. And then it got to about February 2018, and I basically went on a night out. I don't remember much of it. And I woke up in the morning, horrendous beer fear, horrendous anxiety. And something just switched in me. And I just said, I just don't think I can do this again. It wasn't like one wrong, like rock bottom. It definitely wasn't the worst hangover I'd ever had, and probably hadn't done the stupidest things that I'd ever done. But I just thought, I can't do this anymore. So I downloaded Catherine Gray's book, The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. And I just loved it. And no one, it sounds really silly, but no one had ever at that point spoke to me about sobriety like a positive. Everyone had always come from what you're giving up, what you're leaving behind, you wouldn't be fun anymore. No one had ever said to me, actually, sobriety could be really amazing. It could be really incredible. And I remember even like little things, like Catherine was talking about how you tan better when you don't drink, because like alcohol depletes your, I think it's your vitamin B reserves, and you need those to like tan better. So even like these things when I was a 26-year-old that like loved being orange really appealed to me, and no one had ever spoken to me about it in that way. So I said, well, I'm going to give it a go. And then nearly, so it'll be 4 years in February that I haven't drunk for. Thank you.
I mean, because I'm a bit close to the edge today, this is making me want to cry, because like I just feel such a parallel story to you. I find it really difficult to know how to describe it, because alcohol in the short term wasn't hugely detrimental, dangerously detrimental to my health. It wasn't going to cost me my job or my relationship. However, the things that I was doing, the way I was behaving, as you say, I woke up thinking, who are you and what are you doing? Especially like, we both are from media kind of jobs, so drinking was very much part of the culture there. And as I got more senior at work, I was like, you shouldn't be drinking like that. But all the drinking we were doing at the time for me felt very normalized. You know, at uni, I blacked out a couple of times a week in my, you know, my most hedonistic days, but so did other people. That was just like part of, oh, we've got memory loss from last night. And so it's very difficult, because people, when you talk about the fact that you're not drinking, want to you to tell them you had an awful drinking problem. And on the one hand, I didn't. But on the other hand, I fully believe as a society, we've got an awful drinking problem.
100%. I think as well, like, I put myself in some scary situations, some dangerous situations. And the only person who actually ever showed any kind of worry about my drinking was my mum. And I think because the mum's worry anyway. But not at one point did any of my friends said, I think you need to like pull it back a bit. No one was particularly worried about my drinking, which was worrying. Mm. So it is interesting. And it would be, I think I probably made it worse as well, because we do this thing like after a night of drinking where we like use self-deprecating humour. And I definitely think it's like a British thing as well. And like I would wake up and be like, oh, Lol ruined my life again last night. So I think I downplayed the severity of it. Like I could be absolutely crushed inside and I'd be like, oh God, can you believe what I did? And it almost turned it into jokes, and it wasn't funny, but the only way that I could like make it okay was to sort of like douse it in this humor. And we seem to do that of like, we see people in these awful states and we don't think, oh, that's actually quite serious. We just laugh about
it. I always think, what I mean, basically I don't go out very much anymore, not because of sobriety, it's because I'm getting older, but I see people like on the tube kind of, or on the train falling asleep drunk, and it makes my palms sweat. But I did that. You know, I missed train stations on the way home. I woke up in other places. And at the time, I didn't think that was anything, you know, it's just one of the lulls on a night out. But as especially now as a parent or anybody, I think it's absolutely terrifying. And I had so many scrapes. And did I snog people that I didn't want to snog? Probably yes, you know. And it is these little bits that you permeate. And do you tell bits of gossip that you wish you didn't tell? Did you make jokes that you didn't wish you? Yes, 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 yes. But the problem is for me, I think that I spent a long time believing that the drunk Clemmy, the extreme extrovert Clemmy, was me, and that I was hiding it the rest of the time. That wasn't me. That was, a boozed up version of me.
Yeah, 100%. They say, what is it, like a sober... I can't remember the actual saying, but basically people think that the real you comes out when you're drunk, and that couldn't be farther from the truth, because alcohol affects like your prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that is kind of responsible for like emotional response and rational decision making and knowing the difference between right and wrong. So you basically are not yourself when you're drinking, no matter what people say. And I don't know about you, I used to like just saying the most random stuff that like wasn't even true. I remember one time I was out on a night out and I said to my friends, oh, we need to get on that boat. And they were like, what is she talking about? Like, it's not, the truth doesn't come out. It's just absolute like random garbage. But we believe like that these things that people are saying when they're drinking are like the truth, and that's the real them, and that's how they really feel. And often that really is not.
And also that thing of, I grew up in the era of like the Laddick culture, and I really... Oh, they were a bit older than me, but that felt like the really rebellious thing to do. I want to be those rock and roll girls drinking pints and going and getting on boats and not knowing where you wake up. You know, that felt so glamorous and exciting. But now I always think that for me, sobriety feels like the rock and roll choice. You know, it is the rebel's choice. It is breaking against the norm. And actually, you know, you've got a lot of high profile people who were probably in that Laddick culture who now don't drink, but it feels like a huge act of rebellion, doesn't it, in a good way?
Yeah, 100%, because you're going against something that is so normalized, and you are like often the odd one out, and you can choose to see that as very isolating and lonely, which it can be, or you can also embrace it as this like, wow, like it takes a lot of guts and strength to go like against something that is so normalized in our society.
It really does. And you know what, I swing between both states often. At the beginning of a night out, and you're like, oh, I'll have something else, and I'm not going to drink, and I'm not going to get that really quick access to relaxation. I feel really isolated. And then the moment I kind of walk home, or I get into bed, or the next morning, I just feel this intense gratitude to myself. Like, just, yes, you've made the right decision for you. And I feel smug. And yeah, I do.
Yeah, 100%. And I always say, like, even, I mean, nothing's linear really in life, but the enjoyment of like a sober night out is not linear. Like, sometimes I'll get there and I'll feel a bit awkward. And then I think One thing I have learned as well is that it's not necessarily the alcohol that eases you into the situation. It's just that naturally you ease into the situation. Like I went to a drinks tasting a few weeks ago that was a non-alcoholic drink. And when everyone got there, first of all, you could tell everyone was a bit awkward. No one really knew each other. We were all sitting at tables with people we didn't know. And then an hour in, it was really buzzy and it was really chatty and no one had touched a drop. And these weren't just sober people. These were people that normally do drink and then come for this like non-alcoholic drinks tasting. And they even like pointed it out when they were talking about it in the speech and were saying, look how comfortable everyone is. Like, it's not booze. And I always say we give so much to booze, like so much credit to booze that we should give to ourselves. Sometimes it is just a situation. And sometimes, you know, I'll be having a few good hours on a night out. I'll be loving the dance floor. And then actually I get a bit tired. I'm like, I think I want to go home now. Yeah, it's not linear. Some parties I go to, I'm like, this is awful. Some parties I go to, I'm like, this is amazing. I think the thing that you find out is that like good parties, good parties, and bad parties, 100%. Bad parties. And yeah, alcohol could make a bad party good, but you don't necessarily want to force it. Whereas, you know, you just work out what you like doing and what music you like.
Yeah, and actually people say, oh, do you miss out on things? Well, number one, if I'm not invited to stuff because I don't drink, which may well happen, then they weren't the people who I wanted to hang out with anyway. Yeah, all those nights that, if I'm honest, I might have gone to because there was free booze. You know, if I need a couple of warm glasses of Prosecco to enjoy myself, then I shouldn't even be going. So the fact is, when I do go out, I've really, really opted in. And I only go to the really good, the stuff that I know that I'm going to enjoy with people whose company I genuinely want to be in.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I could have partied with anyone when I was drinking. It didn't matter if they were friends, if I liked them. Whereas now I just spend all my time with people that I like and that I know I can get on really well with sober. So I don't feel like I'm ever forcing anything.
But also I think with sobriety, I feel like my body's learned to get those natural highs better. You have to sit with it. And a year ago, in a big gap in COVID last summer, which was brief, I went camping with a load of friends and I watched them all kind of get a little bit pissed and loose. And then I got there, but it just took me a couple of hours longer because my body had to kind of unwind, as you say, naturally. But the more it gets used to doing that, I think it does relearn it. Do you feel that?
100%. And I think as well that you actually get to experience more of those higher emotions, because it's not just like sad emotions that we plaster booze over. It's the good ones as well, you know, like excitement. I think it's in Alan's car book. Like he always says, he finds it really absurd that like when someone's like really nervous or excited before their wedding, they will drink because they can't deal with what is actually a really good emotion. Like nerves are great. Excitement is great. And we do that. You know, like if we've done something exhilarating, we're like, oh God, I need to have a drink to take the edge off. It's not just the bad emotions. So actually you keep those highs and you learn to be able to deal with those highs as well and sit with the highs and not just the lows, rather than being like, oh God, this is too much and too exciting. And you know, like when you're going on holiday and I mean, I used to love an airport beer as much as anyone, but what I actually find is that I keep riding the holiday wave. Whereas when I used to have a beer, I'd be like, oh, I'm relaxed now. But now it's still like excitement. I think you learn to sit with those like big, exciting emotions.
That's so true. You basically take the edges off all the top and the bottom, so it's so true, because I often find actually from doing podcasts, and actually when I went out on a night out on Saturday night and I woke up in the morning, I said if I didn't know better I would think I was hungover now, but you can still get massive adrenaline drops because you get that big high. There is something else that goes on, but again you just have to wiggle through that, which ties me a bit into you have just gone through a breakup, which is, I'm going to sound really cold now. I've talked to Millie off mic, but it's really difficult. But as you said, because in sobriety, you can't hide from your feelings. You feel like you're accelerating through the breakup process because you have to lean right into all of the emotions.
Yeah, 100%. Because I think all that drinking a lot of the time does is delay those emotions. Like you will have to face them eventually. They're not going anywhere. Booze isn't this like magic elixir that gets rid of your emotions forever. It just literally, I mean, I think you've used one of the best analogies where it's like a comfort knickers where you like squash it all down, but it is going to like spill out eventually. And I think that is the case. Whereas where I haven't pushed it down and squashed it in, I've just let it flow. So, I mean, I spent the first like week just like absolutely shedding tears galore. And now I already feel like I've started to feel better. Whereas I think had I been drinking, I would have gone out probably on like a 3-week bender of just going out every weekend, getting absolutely plastered, pretending the whole thing hadn't happened, crying at 3 a.m. into some McNuggets. Whereas now I've actually faced it head on. You know, I've been really regimented about self-care and looking after myself and feeding my body what it needs and getting outside and just being, it sounds really regimented, but like a bit disciplined with myself, with like, okay, this is how we're going to do it, rather than just like going into absolute chaos. And you 100% need distraction. Like distraction and escapism are really important to us, but just some forms of distraction and escapism are more harmful to us and will prolong the pain, you know, in the long term. So, you know, I've been numbing out with trash chocolate. TV. I started watching Ready to Mingle. Yeah, chocolate, cake, all those things. But just something that I particularly know would be more detrimental to me would be going out and drinking, because also the next day I would just spiral. I would be calling, I would be crying. I just know that it's not going to be good for me. But already I feel like I'm in a mentally stronger place just by getting through this without
And it. As you touched on earlier, you know, that the shame cycle of drinking, that I think was the bit that was the end of things for me. I knew for a long time, I knew I shouldn't drink. I knew it didn't agree with my mental health. I knew I didn't like the person I was being. But I carried on for social conformity because I didn't know how not to carry on. And then you wake up and you in regret. And if for you, you're feeling all these feelings that come with a breakup anyway, you pour a load of shame on that. And it's just explosive. And not only that, I always say to keep my mental health intact, I need to exercise. I need to eat all right. And I'm not talking green juices. I'm talking just not plowing sugar probably into my face. And I need to sleep. And alcohol jeopardizes all three of those, as well as being the fuel on top of it. And so, as you say, when we talk about self-care, this isn't bubble baths. This is doing very grown-up things, which is trying to move, trying to sleep, trying to not plow awful food into our mouths.
Yeah, it throws everything out of whack is what I used to find, is that even if I got myself into like a really good routine, and I think routine is quite important for me in terms of self-care, of like to make sure that I'm doing those basic things, you go on one bender and that whacks you out for like 3 days, and then you have to try and get back into that routine, which can be really hard. Once you've spent the weekend, you know, eating 3 Domino's pizzas and cheesy chips for breakfast, it's quite hard to get back from get back into that. So just like that consistency, I always say I think consistency is really underrated. It sounds really boring, but not having alcohol in my life has just allowed me to be consistent in every part of my life, whether that's work, whether that's showing up for friends, whether that's my mental health. It is just a lot more consistent.
There is never that, oh, I can't do that tomorrow because of this. I can, every day is exactly, you know, a Saturday is the same as a Monday for me. It's the same as a Tuesday. And I always think of it a bit like you're just plodding along always. You've got, because if you struggle with mental health things or just life, which is constantly shifting the balance already, you know, our whole life is about trying to get some equilibrium, and alcohol just sends it haywire. And it sends it haywire at the points when you least need it to. You know, if you really check in with when you reach for a drink, whether that's because you're riding positive emotions or probably because you're a bit stressed, you know, that Friday night urge, I'll probably never get over the kind of, I want something to mark the end of the working week. But you just have to try and sit with that a bit. And then before you know it, you've gone to bed and you wake up on Saturday and you're not trying to even out for the weekend. You're just cruising into it.
Yeah, 100%. And every time you get through one of those things, and so it's almost like you give yourself like a mini gold star. So it's like you're constantly like hyping yourself up because you do something really tough and then you're like, oh, amazing. And I think that builds a lot of like self-belief, self-confidence, because the more you do it, the more you're like, oh, I can do this. And you're constantly pushing yourself and constantly. So it's not like you're living this like monotonous, consistent, boring life. You're constantly pushing yourself and testing yourself and getting through it. So I think that's really like commendable.
I agree. And then I'm going, the little voice in my head is like, oh, here we go. It's smug sobriety. And, you know, why do people talk about it? But you know what? I think I do want to shout about it from the rooftops, because I absolutely, my idea of what not drinking was one of abstinence, of one of missing out, of of life being a little bit more boring. And I just say it every single time. It is the single best decision I've made for myself as an adult, for sure. No doubt. It feels like a constant gift, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's really hard with the whole smug thing. Like, if I came on here and was talking to you about, you know, how meditation changed my life, you wouldn't necessarily be like, true. Oh, super smug. You'd be like, oh, she's done something, improved her mental health and wants to share it with other people to help them. And, you know, I don't care if people drink, all my friends drink, all my family drink. Like, I don't mind being around drunk people. Sometimes I actually, like, quite like it because I just ride off their drunk waves. I'm like, oh, if you're being drunk, I'll just act drunk. So it's not I have anything against it. I don't turn my nose up at people. How could I? Like, that was me for so long. But all I want to do is say, look, if you're struggling with mental health, anxiety particularly, that was me. Drinking made it worse. At the time, I didn't realise drinking was made it worse, and maybe you don't realise either. So maybe if I can impart this wisdom, this might really change your life in the way that it's changed mine. I'm not trying to be
No, I agree because, anxiety shrunk my world for quite a while. And then, as you say, in order to unshrink it, I would drink because it was it seemed like a very quick fix, and then it would come back worse and worse. And honestly, I didn't put two and two together. I did not go, my anxiety is terrible, you're drinking more, these two things are related. And even though my hangovers showed up as anxiety, I just didn't join the dots. So yeah, I really urge people, just my starter would always be just to try it. If you are in a patch of bad anxiety, it'd be quite obvious to cut back on coffee, for example. But I think it's miraculous, the impact of not drinking alcohol on anxiety.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard, and especially hard because I think people sometimes stop, and often it gets worse before it gets better, because we're so often self-medicating things like anxiety by drinking. So when you stop, all of a sudden you don't have that coping mechanism. So you might actually think, oh, wow, my anxiety is getting worse. This is not good for me. But actually what we do is we've got ourselves into a cycle of drinking to cope with anxiety, which drinking exacerbates anxiety, like it's very proven by science. And then the next morning, you know, you're feeling anxious, and then you drink again. Whereas when you stop, you have to really like cut back on that cycle, and eventually you'll get to a point where you do feel reduced anxiety. But initially that can rise for some people. So I would say, like, don't give up drinking for 30 days and then go, well, my anxiety is worse, so this is a terrible idea. Like, I always say a 90-day period at least to really check in. Yeah, I think so. I just think, especially with 30 days, like, a lot of the time, especially if you do it in January, and I love dry January, so this is not me slagging off dry January, but I think in January, a lot of people don't really go out. You know, it's cold. You might not have to face weddings and all those things that you might have to do in other months. So it is like an easier month to do it because a lot of people are staying in, saving money. You know, Christmas has been expensive. So it's sometimes an easier month to do because it just is. So I think challenging yourself to 90 days, you're going to have, like, maybe you do have a wedding, maybe you do have a party, maybe you do have something to challenge yourself and actually understand how alcohol is affecting you. And yeah, I just think 90 days is a bit more of a period to kind of
But it's so difficult, isn't it? Because I know that 90 days would feel like a lifetime. But I mean, it's all those cliches, but because everyone, when you don't drink, is it forever? And to begin with, I used to really, really hate that question, actually, because it really is a one day at a time. I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink at the weekend. Probably the same and same. Although now, when you banked 2.5 years of not drinking, I can't see a time when I would ever drink again. But that isn't to say, for me, no, I don't think I'll ever drink again. Do you?
No, I always say I'm fairly certain, like 99%. And also, like, I don't know, in my head, I quite like certainty. So although I think at the start I took it like one day at a time, I got to a point where I was like, okay, let's just make this a decision. Don't sit on the fence. Just say, this is a forever thing. And it's almost like it helped me to close the door. It's like closure on a relationship. You know, all the while you keep that door open, you never move on fully. So by kind of saying, yeah, I'm done now. That is it. Me and alcohol are over. it allows me to just concentrate on sober like lifestyle and how I'm going to get through the next, you know, 50 years alcohol-free, rather than focusing on, oh God, what if I want to drink then and what if I want to drink then. For me, it was just easier. But I know that's not very fun. I know some people for 50 years need to take like a one day at a time approach, but I just got to a point where I was like, no, this is it, like call time on it.
That's now. Yeah, it's really interesting because I used to be quite a heavy smoker and then I gave up. And then after I gave up, and actually only when I drank, I would occasionally still have a cigarette. And it only ever confirmed to me that I didn't want to smoke anymore. But I did for a while repeatedly do that. And again, as I'm talking about this, I know people who are in recovery who would say this isn't my journey, but I am fairly sure I could have a glass of champagne at something and that be that. I could put a lid on it. But as you say, what I don't want is the conversation in my mind. I don't want it to be, actually at weddings now you have a drink and at whatever you have this. And then I know my personality type, it quickly creeps back in. And for me, that is a risk not worth taking because sobriety gives me so much joy. I'm also a bit scared. I wonder if I have one drink, whether that anxiety would come and smack me around the face again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. So there's like this theory that people are either natural moderators or natural abstainers. So some people would find moderating easy. So, but people like me, I'm a natural abstainer. It's much easier for me to have none than it is to have one. Because if I have one, then the next time I go, oh, I could probably have two now, actually. And then the next time I'll be like, oh, I'm going to have three. Like, I think it would start fine, but I think 6 months later, when, you know, I'd had a really bad day and I wanted to go out and I thought, well, I had that drink at that wedding, probably when I was in a good mood, then I'd maybe end up drinking in a bad mood and it would escalate. So for me, it's just easier and more freeing. Like, I think people think it's probably quite regimented to be like, oh, I'm never drinking again. But for me, it's actually, yeah, really freeing to be like, that's it now. Just close the door on it, box it up, it's done. Because if I start thinking about moderation, it does give me more anxiety. And it is like, well, what if I didn't control it? And what if I did like go overboard one night? How would I rein it back in? And it's just too much. And I don't want that. I like my life. I don't know why I would want to risk the life that I've built over the last 4 years just for the odd glass.
No, I agree. And a couple of things there that you said. Number one, that it's easy for me to say I would have one when I'm level. And part of the reason I'm relatively level is because of sobriety. That's exactly the point. Whereas if, yeah, I choose it later on in a less bad way, then that equilibrium, that scale just flips. And yeah, it's no good. And also what I always think to myself, it's just a glass of liquid. I mean, isn't it absolutely bizarre?
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh, don't you miss a nice glass of red? I mean, don't get me wrong. Although I obviously haven't had one for a couple of years, so maybe I won't love it. I can appreciate that tastes delicious. But it's just a liquid drink. And for me, that drink unfurls so much. So, yes, I can sacrifice that.
Yeah, I think as well, like, I was a binge drinker. That was the way I like to drink. So I always say for me personally as well, like one or two drinks doesn't even sound appealing. And alcohol-free drinks now I think are so good that if I really fancied a glass of Prosecco, I'd just have an alcohol-free one and it would probably hit a spot. If I was going to drink, it would be because I would want to get, you know, absolutely out of it, which I don't want to do.
No.
So one or two for me is just so not worth it when the options are so good these days.
And that's another important point. When I was a drinker, I was searching for that blurry feeling, you know, that's always what I wanted, that hazy, chilled. But, and now I relish the absolute clarity. You know, you go on a night out, you go to a wedding and you remember every single moment, all the good bits, rather than just a kind of blurry sense of what it was like.
Yeah, I'm the person who's like, oh, I loved the chairbos at your wedding. And everyone else is like, they were chairbos. Yes. And I'm like, yes.
And also, I'm the person who loved the pudding. When everyone else is too pissed and they've got up, I'm always like, well, I'm going to eat this pudding. I'm probably going to eat that pudding. And then I'm going to go and find the cheese board and I'm going to enjoy every single mouthful of it. Whereas everyone else is up and gone by then, haven't they?
Yeah. I went to a wedding a few weeks ago, actually, and that was the exact case. I was like, the only person who ate my sticky toffee pudding. And then, like, later on, they brought out, because they'd had a hog roast in the day, so they brought out, like, all these, like, pork bats. And no one was touching them. Like, literally, no one was touching this table. And I was like, I will get through a few of those for you, don't
I? I am front of the queue. Yeah, but it's so true. And The other the thing I was confused about is when I was drinking, I assumed everybody else was pissed. I'd go to a wedding and be like, oh my God, everyone was hammered. No, the hammered people are hanging out with the hammered people. In any given situation, there are people who might be ill, might be pregnant, might be trying to get pregnant, just don't like drinking. There are a whole bunch of people quietly sitting on the tables that I always thought were the boring ones, but actually they're having really lovely, sober, connected conversations, and they're not looking enviously at you drunk people banging around on the dance floor. They're having a lovely, like, yeah, a very different time, but a lovely time.
Yeah, I remember when I first stopped drinking, I was like, oh, this is great, because, you know, the shoe's going to be on the other foot, I'm going to be carrying my friends home. And then actually I was like, oh, okay, it turns out they don't actually drink as much as I thought they did.
No, exactly.
Yeah, they're all like, I mean, they drink, but I've never had to carry any of them home. Like, they're all relatively well behaved. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, my drinking was actually bad, because you guys are quite normal.
That's so true. Yeah. That's a real yeah, you always thought that you were kind of you were equally drunk together, and as we're talking about the way we used to drink, the chances are we probably weren't. And also I now think, wow, I hate the thought that I'd ever been any kind of burden to my mates, and I don't think they would articulate it like that, but it's a real responsibility if you've got the person who is always really drunk.
Yeah, and I was always drunk and crying. It wasn't just drunk. It was like, oh, God, Millie is crying again. And I used to tell them I was horrible to my friends. I am shocked that they are still friends with me, because I used to say, like, I remember they organised this really lovely birthday for me. It started out in the day. It was like 6 p.m., went on till like 2 o'clock, and they left at 2 o'clock, because they left at 2 o'clock and not like 4 o'clock. You had a go at them. I had a go at them. I said, I hate you. You're shit friends. Honestly, I wasn't vile. The next day I had like a lot of apologizing to do. And they said I rang my ex-boyfriend. I was shouting down the phone, like, they're the worst friends ever, just because they wanted to go home at 2 o'clock, like normal people. And now I'm like, oh, 11:30.
Actually, I wasn't a crier. I used to injure myself. I used to bang into stuff, fall over. Yeah. And I used to lose stuff. I used to lose my phone, my wallet, my keys, my coat, just leaving it, the trail of destruction. But actually, one of the most important things for me in this side of my journey is my best mate said to me about a year down the line, Clemmy, I want you to know you are so much more fun now than you ever were when you were drunk. And I find that incomprehensible, because I thought I was extremely fun when I was drunk. But, you know, when you're belly laughing, and as you say, other people's drunkenness is very contagious. So, you know, I've learned to be silly in a way that I probably had forgotten how to do. But yeah, it's so pure, and there isn't that lingering shame or guilt or, yeah, no regrets. I'm just having a really good time just having a good time. And it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I mean, you keep saying the word consistent, but it's like a consistent fun, because when I went on holiday, like with the girls, there would be nights out that I probably was a lot of fun, but very drunk. But then for like two days after, I'd be like dying on a sun lounge. Yeah. Like, no one speak to me because I'm so hungover. Whereas now, I'm fun on the night out, and then I wake up and I'm like, let's go get coffee and cinnamon buns. Like, it's a kind of consistent fun throughout. It's not highs like and lows. Manically high and then, really low. It's just nice.
That's so true. And actually, holidays is an important thing, because that's quite a milestone to get over. Although COVID has put, you know, scuppers on the holidays. But I love that when people don't realise when they get the post-holiday blues, I think a lot of that is a like come down from more regular drinking, of course, when you have a beer whatever time by the pool, when you're having more alcohol than you would on that time when you're away. Of course, when you come back to real life, that's gonna bite you. And I do find, of course, I'm sad when holidays are over, but not in the same way.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually come back, it's almost like it's what a holiday is supposed to do. I come back refreshed, relaxed, nice and glowy. Like, I feel calmer. I don't feel like grey and dying I immediately needed another holiday. It's not like that. It's actually like, oh, this is the purpose of a holiday.
I'm so interested about that tanning thing. I've got dark skin anyway, but people talk to me about it all the time. Oh, what nationality are you? Have you got anything else in you? I haven't. And I'm just, but again, pretty healthy, I think, and outside quite a lot. But yeah, it's interesting. Do you think that it does increase your ability to tan?
Yeah, apparently. That's what it says.
I'm going to go and read up about that in a minute. That's a...
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many secret things that we don't realise, like, are better. I mean, the one I wrote about, so people get saying to me that, like, cliche phrase of, like, oh, your eyes are more sparkly. And I just thought, oh, God, they're all just, like, trying to be nice. But when I looked into it, so, like, in Chinese medicine, every, like, organ is connected to, like, a sense. And your liver is connected to your eyes. So in Chinese medicine, like if your eyes are like yellow or something, they think it's like a problem liver. With your liver rather than like your eyes. So I was like, well, that makes complete sense. Because now that my liver is clean and sparkling, maybe my eyes are brighter. Like, and I do think my eyes look, I've got blue eyes, but I've never really thought, oh, my eyes are really blue. They've always been a more like greyish blue. But sometimes I look at my eyes now and I'm like, they are really blue, aren't they? And I totally put that down to sobriety and having like a clear liver.
And also nothing like shame and guilt and regret to take the sparkle out of your eyes. And for me, when I've been in the grips of bad mental health, you know, it makes the whole world feel really a much more dull place. And look, this isn't a surefire fix for mental health, but it definitely has taken the peaks of it out, and it's made me have to deal with my stuff. So when I gave up drinking, I think it was Millie who said to me, you know, this first year you're on cloud nine, you think you discovered something brilliant, you literally feel like you're seeing the world again, don't you? And you're just like, this is the best thing ever. And then year two, and I'm now, you know, 2.5 years in, you suddenly have to face all of your stuff, all of it, because it's just there, isn't it? You've got nowhere to hide. Like, oh, really? I thought I'd done quite a lot of therapy. I thought I was kind of self-aware. And you just have to, keep living with that, which is, again, probably why it fixes some of the mental health stuff, because you have to deal with it, which might sound scary, but you don't want to spend your life numbing all everything, do you?
Yeah, I just think it gives you more... It's ironic because I thought I was like controlling my mental health with booze, really. That was like my way of kind of dampening my anxiety. But actually, the next thing, you have absolutely no control. Like, you can't just get it out of your system. Your mind will take you to places that are like unimaginable. Whereas now I just feel like I have a bit more of a handle on my mental health. It's not to say I don't struggle, because I do, but I'm a lot more practical as well. So I like wake up, and obviously I'm clear. So I'm like, okay, what do we need to do today? Right, we need to eat better today. We need to go out and get some sunshine. We haven't seen daylight in a couple of days. Like, we need to maybe just take a step back from our emails. I'm a lot more pragmatic about it. I feel like I've got a real handle on it, because I don't wake up and spiral and then try and piece my night back together and try and find my phone and all those things. It just feels like just like I've got a bit more of a handle on it, really. And I just want to stress, it's not to say that it like clears every mental health issue that got, but it just makes it more manageable personally.
Yeah, that's true. I think the older you get, life is a hell of a juggle, and there's a lot of plates to spin, and the idea of trying to spin those plates a couple of glasses down is unworkable. It's as simple as that, whereas constant clarity gives you a real good chance of making things work, I think.
Yeah, I always use the like bake-off analogy. Like, when I was drinking, it was like I was using a wooden spoon to like make my cake mix. Like, it's hard. I'm doing it, but it's hard. It's taking a lot longer. Like, it's quite tough and it hurts a bit. But then now I feel like sobriety is this like super whizzy stand mixer that I just put my mix in. It's great. It helps me. It makes the process a lot faster. Everything's more streamlined. Everything's smoother. Like, that's how I feel about it.
I do think that. I always think it's like the ultimate level up. I really do.
Yeah.
And so often when I find an author or a TED talk or something where I think, God, you've really done the thinking. You are switched on. You kind of feel like you're working through your life in the way that I admire. They so often end up being sober.
Yeah, like Brené Brown, Glennon Doyle, all those people who have just got those like that thing, and a lot of them they don't drink.
Yeah, so I think we made it quite clear that we think that not drinking is really great.
Yeah, if we haven't stressed,
guys, it's really good. My last couple of questions for you is, how does it sit with you now that your life, because of the work that you do, this part of the work that you do, has ended up being defined by your sobriety? Is that ever something that weighs heavy? How does that sit with you?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because I think it does seep into my personal life with people I don't know. People I do already know, I barely speak to about sobriety. Like, we will only speak about it in a work capacity. They'll say, like, what's going on with work? How are the meetups going? Things like that. They won't ever actually ask me about my sobriety per se, and it's never an awkward conversation. They don't ever pressure me to drink. It rarely comes up. But, I mean, like, I went on a hen do a few months ago, and the sister of the bride had organised it. And she was really worried that I think she'd seen my stuff, seen me talk about sobriety. And I think she was really worried about how I was going to be on the hen. So my friend Emma said to me, oh, you know, my sister actually said that you were a really good laugh. And I was like, yeah, I am a really good laugh. Like, people got this perception that I'm not. So that I sometimes struggle with, because I just do think that people have this gut reaction to, like, sobriety is, oh, they're going to be really uptight, they're going to be really boring. And that's, like, always been one of the things that, like, one of the stigmas I wanted to smash is that I'm, like, I'm really normal. I love a night out. Like, I'm one of the girls. Like, I'm fun. I'm still so me. So that I do struggle with. But apart from that, like, I love it because it was like I stumbled across a secret that, like, changed my life. And I love sharing that with people. And I get so many amazing, incredible emails and DMs from people who have, like, read the book and said, you know, like, I've done this. I've taken it out of my life and I've had this, like, miracle. And it's like just seeing yourself, like, a few years ago and being like, wow, that's, like, amazing. So, I mean, I love it. And the people who are already in my life know that I'm fun and I don't have to prove anything to them. So it doesn't really bother me if strangers think that I'm an uptight arsehole.
And you know what? Being boring is kind of great as well, you know. I kind of really relish the fact that I like, put sleep quite high on my list, etc., etc. But I agree. It's so humbling and amazing if someone messages you and says, as you did to me, but then I hope I've paid that forward a few times. So I've decided to finally 100%. Give up because of you. And it's not, I don't take credit for that, but if I can help be this, you know, the thing that tips the balance, it gives people the confidence to give it a go. That I think we're both equally passionate about that. Sobriety isn't the only answer. Alcohol isn't wrong, but it's definitely a positive and people should consider it and just try it. And
I you don't need to talk about alcohol from, like, the bad point. This is just offering, like, a perspective of how sobriety could be really good for you. And I mean, even people will sometimes message me and say, oh, I'm not completely sober, but I have, like, really cut back on my drinking. And I'm like, that is amazing. Like, you don't have to apologize. Any kind of relationship alcohol change, I think, is incredible. I'm not like, you need to be abstinent to be in the club. Like, that's not how it is. I just want people to see that actually there is a benefit. I mean, the thing that I keep saying lately is, like, the strapline of the new updated edition, which is, like, why drinking less means living more. That's all I want to put into the world, is that actually if you do a little less drinking, you can do a little bit more living. And that's kind of it.
For reference, I'm a Pisces and I'm quite a bit wobbly. And so that is making me want to cry. And that is all it is. It is, like, we've got one crack at this. And of course have the glass of red wine if you want, but man, life with absolute clarity is a gift, because I want to log all of it in my head. I want it to be there. I don't want it to be blurred. And especially the nights out with people I love, especially people's weddings, especially any kind of celebration. And actually, even if we're talking about funerals, I want to feel all of that. I want to be 100% in the room. And that alcohol gives me, and that, not having alcohol gives me the chance to do that. So,
I actually met a really young Muslim girl a couple of months ago, and we were talking about the fact that her family doesn't drink. And I just said, oh, how do you feel about the fact that you won't ever drink? And she said, oh, I feel fine about it. She said, I just like the idea that I'm living life exactly as it is. And I was like, wow. She was like 17. I was like, that's so profound. Like, that is all it is. You're living it, not blurred, not altered. Like, you're just seeing it unfiltered. And yeah, it can be shit sometimes, but it can also be amazing.
Exactly that. She knows. I'm going to steal that quote now as well. Two questions before I end. Where can people find you, and what do you want to shout about? Or is there anything you want to shout about?
People can find me at Millie Gooch or at Sober Girl Society. The main thing I would like to shout about is that we have an updated edition of the book coming out in December. So that's going to have an extra chapter on it, which is going to talk all things sober curiosity. So there is quite a heavy focus on abstinence in the book, because that was my story and that's what worked for me. But I wanted to include a lot more for people who were just thinking about cutting down and not quitting entirely, because I don't want to dissuade anyone that thinks that abstinence is scary. So I think moderation and cutting down is a good first step for anyone.
I agree. So that is called the Sober Girl Society Handbook, and it's available at all places that you get books.
It is, all usual
books. And my second question, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
Oh, I mean, at this point, probably my ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, and maybe you don't want to necessarily say it on a podcast, but...
Yeah,
but say all the stuff.
Yeah, I think him probably. I don't know. There's actually lots of people. Do you know what? I'd love to have an honest conversation with Princess Diana. That'd be
again
great.
already wobbly. Anything in particular? Just to see if she was okay. She was.
Yeah, just to ask. Yeah, what happened and how is she? I've been reading a lot about her lately. I don't know why I feel quite drawn to Princess Diana. Because
you can sense her pain, and I think as you get older and you begin to realize how old she was at your age, you know, that's the bit that was mind-blowing to me in The Crown, which I know isn't real, but it gives you a pretty good sense. Like, she was so young.
Princess
Diana people. And then some telepathic words to your ex-boyfriend that we can fill in the gaps for.
Yeah, that you would have to bleep out.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, thank you so much. This has been everything I hoped it would be. And I kind of feel like we need to do this annually. And
yeah, oh my God, 100%.
Because I think we'll always have new things to say, will we?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every time I think I've like learned everything that there is about sobriety and emotions, I'm like, oh, no one. And like, I mean, you have new challenges all the time. This, what I'm going through now is a new challenge. You'll have different challenges. Like, I mean, there'll probably be a point, I don't know if your kids really ask you now, where you need to talk to them about alcohol and things like that. There's always going to be new conversations around this. So it's not just one conversation and done. I think, we could definitely do that.
Yeah, and maybe I'll get to see you in real life at some point. Oh, well, that made me feel everything that I hoped it would make me feel. I really can't believe that last time Millie and I spoke, I was still on the fence about whether sobriety was... Actually, I don't even think that I realised sobriety was what I wanted. I knew that I was unhappy with drinking, but I didn't know what the next steps would hold. But as I made perfectly clear in the episode, it has been the single best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel constantly grateful for my choices. In fact, I was at a family friend's wedding this weekend. And weddings are one of those ones where I have to remind myself of why I do this, because there's free-flowing champagne, there's a lot of people that I love there, it's a happy occasion, my brain goes, okay, let's have a glass, it'll be all right, it's a perfect setting. But actually, if I can wiggle through that initial part when I think I want one, and then crack on with the rest of the night, by the time I go home, and even more so by the next morning, I just feel absolutely delighted that A, I made a choice that works for me, B, as I said in the podcast, that I can remember every single moment of the night. And that the great, amazing wedding doesn't then have to be a negative because it affects my Monday or Tuesday with a hangover. In fact, I can just enjoy the wedding for what it is and begin my week as normal. So life without alcohol for me really is brilliant. And I don't ever want to look like I'm a point judgment for anyone else, but I really do invite people to look at it for themselves. And thank you, Millie, for our conversation today, but also for the really quite watershed moment that our conversation back in February 2019 was. It was really amazing. So that's a wrap. That's another episode of But Why Done. So grateful to have you here. Join me next week for more chats. And in the meantime, please do rate, review, subscribe, tell your mates about it. Get in touch on butwhy@clemmytelford.com. See you next week. Bye.